So, who are you? And the usual rules apply. Look at
me. Right, we have to all introduce each other.
Forget the camera.
To him.
Yeah.
Okay, you're always talking to him, or you're putting your big finger on the screen. One or the other. Anyway, so I'm Eddie Churchill again, and I was here last two weeks ago doing Solution Designer, which is a BizTalk future thingamabobby, which we showed off at PDC. And this time we're coming in and we're going to be talking about one of the artifact editors we have inside of BizTalk, which is a thing called the XSLT Mapper. And unlike most XSLT editors, which is very code-centric, ours is very visual, which is great for first-time users, and not so great after they are thrown at some of these standard schemas that have 10,000 things they have to map with stuff. So,
what is XSLT?
It's one of the great XML formats out there. In this particular case, it's an XML description of how to transform between one particular XSD document to another.
Okay.
And it's very much programming. I mean, it's...
And why do you need to use it? When would you know you need to learn how to do XSD?
If you have an instance document coming in from the outside world, it's probably not in a structure that you want to work with. It's probably in some standard format, whether it's EDI, or in that case it's not XML, it's some sort of flat file. Or it might be like an IDOC type thing from SAP, I think those are from. Or it could be like UAN from Siebel, which is Universal Application Network, which is 15,000 item schemas. Or Justice XML, my personal favorite just because it has a really cool name, it sounds like some sort of superhero. And that's the Justice Department's interop standard schema for dealing with criminal reports and things like that.
Awesome. So who else is here?
Yes. So about a year ago, we wanted to start improving this puppy, this mapper. And so we went over to the... Yeah, this is a simple map. Okay. We went over to MSR and we started asking around questions like, could you help us, please? And even though we first approached George... George, introduce yourself.
I'm George Robertson. I'm from the Visualization and Interaction Research Group. And when Eddie approached us, he showed us the mapper and showed us what, you know, the common customer is trying to build larger and larger schemas and larger maps. And pretty quickly you get spaghetti. It's impossible to figure out what's connected to what. So we used a set of visualization techniques to develop an improved version of the schema mapper. And while we were at it, we also did a series of improvements to the tree view control and the scroll bar. And those all make it possible, in fact, to deal with much larger maps and much larger schemas.
Right. What's your background, by the way?
I have background in... programming language design, operating system design, and artificial intelligence, machine learning, and a lot of background in human-computer interaction. And also information visualization. That's actually a field that I got into about, it was around 1988, and actually I helped start that field. In fact, the term information visualization is a term that I coined.
I knew your name for somewhere.
Yeah, he has lots of documents and PowerPoint presentations and lots of really cool UI type stuff on the external facing Microsoft Research site. So if you went up there and searched George Robinson, you'd find some stuff over there. So.
Yeah, very cool. And who are you?
I'm Phil Bernstein. I'm here with Sergey Melnik.
Hey.
We're part of the database research group working on schemas. Anything to do with schemas and mappings between schemas. And so the problem that they're faced with here with BizTalk Mapper of developing mappings between schemas is one of the types of schema management problems that we worry about.
Right.
And the particular problem for that we've integrated with this tool is automating the mapping process so that you're given two schemas, the source and the target schema. They were independently developed, and it's your job to build all these lines between them that explain how to transform one into the other.
Now, what's a schema?
Schema is a message format or a record format, in this case expressed in the XML schema definition language.
Okay.
And since they were independently developed, the elements of the schemas have different names, sometimes different data types, different structures, and yet you still have to map between them. And so the goal is to, you can either, as we currently do in the shipping product, mostly have to do this yourself, which is to figure out where all the lines go. And we've developed a heuristic auto matcher that makes some educated guesses as to where the solution might lie, so you don't have to go groveling around in this schema you've never seen before and try to find a needle in a haystack. That we
right.
focus your attention on the very likely choices where you're going to find the answer.
Cool.
Even if it is a schema you've seen before, like some of the schemas we'll show you here, they're so large and so written by other humans, okay, that even if you think you knew where one something was, when you come back to it a month later, you're just as lost as you were before. So, you know, it's not just for starting off with simple stuff. It's once you get into the complex stuff, you're always sort of the first-time user every time you go back to a schema.
Yeah. Yeah. And you probably don't live in it every day.
You would hope not. Some of these things are horrific neighborhoods to live in, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just, there's gangs out there who will hurt you. Did you introduce?
Yeah, sure, I can say a word.
Okay.
And what do you do on this team?
So I'm Sergey Melnik. I work with Phil in the database group on the model management project, and Phil and I contributed some ideas to the new mapper in terms of automated schema matching, and I also had a chance to get my hands dirty and contribute a little bit of code and bugs
right.
to that. Too, so
now all three of you, this isn't your day job, right? You're doing research on all sorts of different things, right?
Well, it's an application of the research that we do. That we certainly try to develop solutions to problems that are of interest to products. We don't always know which product is going to be the one that's going to be best able to make use of what we produce. But when we see a problem, a specific problem come along, we look in our bag of tricks of new technology we've developed recently and see if there are some goodies in that bag that we can apply in this particular case. So, no, we don't, you know, we develop, in our case, we've been developing automated schema matching looking at it as a general problem, but
right.
Obviously when we see an opportunity to ship lots of them and help customers, then we stop what we're doing and find.
Now, how did you find these guys?
Okay, so
because they work in a different building about a mile away.
Yeah, they're on the other side of the highway from us.
Yep.
So
I wonder if that's on purpose.
They should be. They
it's
should
a
be.
Bug.
They
that's
should
a bug.
It's a bug. It is not a feature.
They should be a lot closer. So Phil has been working with the mapping group for, it feels like decades, but it's only been years. And we've been bouncing ideas off of him for quite a while. Due to circumstances, it just never made it into the final product.
Yeah.
But this most recent stuff that he's come up with and the schedule that we're currently working on, everything sort of fit together all of a sudden, so that worked out great. In the case, so I knew about Phil because my predecessors knew about Phil, and they went, hey, by the way, one of these days you need to go over and talk to Phil. Maybe we can actually use some of his cool stuff one of these days, and fortunately it's worked out. In the case of George, we're sitting there and we're looking at these huge, horrific maps, and I'll show you a few in just a second, and we came up with a bunch of ideas, but, I mean, around here, it's, you know, it's just like, these are weird things. People are not used to trying to coming up with ideas to solve these problems. So we talked to our friends, a guy named Kennard over in MSR land. He's the PM that we deal with over there, and we go, okay, we've got this large scale, lots of lines all over the place, and they went, okay, large scale visualization problem? Yes. Okay, fine. You need to talk to the large scale visualization guys. So we end up over there with a whole bunch of printed out maps. George looks at it and goes, yes, we'd love to help. So it was a puzzle that was just sort of made for their group. It was just a matter of getting the right group with the right product, and the rest is, as they say, sometime in the future.
Yep.
So, anyway.
So, show me one of these maps and why it was such a, why it's such a complex thing to deal with.
So, this is a...
You like small fonts, too. I love it.
Well, let's see if I can actually...
No, do it.
Okay, fine.
I can get in there.
Alrighty. So, this is a relatively simple map. You've got your source schema. This is a description of all the different data that's coming in.
Yeah.
And then it's mapped to fields that are over in your destination.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, they're what they call functoids. And these are little tiny scripts. I don't know if I can actually make it. Here, hold on. Back up for a second. There we go. Maximize this. Whoa, whoa. Come on. Let's zoom up one step. Okay, fine. All right, so you got your source schema, your destination schema, and then these are little scripts. Why don't you close the door, as opposed to hearing everybody walk by?
We don't care about that.
Yes. So these particular, this is a script and a concatenation, it looks like.
Yep.
And this information comes in, this branch code, and we're changing it somehow based on information that we got from the transaction type. And then that information comes out, goes through this additional functoid, which probably just adds something onto the end, and that data ends up going over to the branch code in the destination. So in other words, the branch code that is here isn't quite the same branch code we want over here. We have to transform it somehow.
Right.
So in a simple world, that's as complicated as it is. They don't stay this simple for long. So let's bring up another one that's a little bit more complicated. So here's one. I'm not going to bother bringing it in with the fancy font here. But you can see this schema is larger.
Yeah.
Okay. You see the little plus marks here. Each one of these has got probably just as much information as this has. Just go ahead and back up. I'll show a bunch at once. This is a little bit more complicated. These turn into whole-scale programs. I mean, it's a visual program, but a program just the same.
Wow.
All right. So here's an example. This is a great example of how this turns into a big, gigantic soup. So I'll go ahead.
So this is these are maps before these guys got involved.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Correct. So
yeah, that's
okay. Fine. So we have lots of lines going through here. This line here, for example, is just going through. Literally just going through. It's just passing by. It doesn't have any bearing on what you're looking at the moment. It's just background noise.
Right.
And so we're looking at this, and this is like, you know, what can we do to make this better? And even this isn't as bad as it gets. This?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Or our new personal favorite, this one.
There's the solid black line.
Yes.
How did you do that? That must have taken a bit of work to do.
This is a customer map.
Okay? That's a real customer map.
These are all real customer maps.
These aren't faked.
No. These are absolutely real customer maps.
Okay. And how could they ever do anything?
How could they? They work at it very, very hard, okay, for lack of better description. Okay, now in this particular case, yeah, I don't know how they work with this stuff. We're very sorry. That's all we can say. Alrighty. So here's the prototype. Alright. So here is the source record.
Yep.
Or the source schema. Here's the destination scheme over here. And we've got simple relationships like plus, alt, standard, default, refund code goes to default overpay code. Alrighty. Once again, this is a real customer map. I couldn't tell you why they name certain things certain ways,
okay.
But go ahead.
So this is a real customer
that
sent you their system.
So in this particular case, this is the permanent customer address run. I can almost make sense of this. This is the customer social security number. So somewhere over here, if you click on customer social security number, you click on this link here, which links to this guy here, which goes to this functoid, which
What do the functoids do again?
In this particular case, this is a value lookup functoid.
Okay.
So based on the value coming in from this guy and this value, this condition, this is this equal to something?
Okay.
It passes on the value or it doesn't. You can think of it sort of like an if then.
Okay.
Okay. In fact, from an XSLT point of view, it is an if then. Okay. So here we run into the problem. So we've got this huge thing and we've got lots of noise, and as we drive around, it just gets worse and worse. Like this link right here, it's pure background noise.
Yep,
it goes from nowhere. If you ever select it, you don't know what you got.
Right.
Okay, because you don't know what's on either end. We actually let you delete these things.
Now, is this still the old tool? Or?
This is the prototype. It has the capability of turning on new features. Okay. And as we go through all this stuff, I'll turn on new things and we'll proceed through everything.
Okay.
But when you're doing these types of demos, it's best to show them how bad it is, so to speak. Now, I say it's bad. This is much easier than writing all the XSLT that's going on behind the scenes
in Notepad.
Okay. Right. Yep. Okay. So this particular one here, background noise. So we thought to ourselves, and George pretty much agreed, that why are all these being drawn with the exact same intensity? Background noise is background noise. So we went, okay, fine. If it's going from nowhere to nowhere, let's draw it very, very light. You might want to select it. Who knows?
Yep.
If it's going from somewhere on the screen, like this one, it's going from somewhere, but going to...
Nowhere.
Draw it a little darker, and then the things that are completely on the screen, let's draw it full intensity. When we started throwing around these ideas without doing a prototype, I mean, here we are, okay, all the lines causing lots of chaos, so what are we going to do? We're going to draw everything in different colors. And everybody basically looked at us and went, how's that going to make that better? It's just going to be noisier, because you can't see it. I mean, so what we did was we came in here and we said, okay, fine, let's turn on color code partial links. Don't ask us, fancy term here. So you'll see here, the ones that are on the screen are the darkest ones. These are a little bit lighter. And then the lightest ones yet, okay, so that's a light one.
Yep.
And a lighter one yet is this one, because that's the one that's going from nowhere and to nowhere.
Yep.
I mean, we still draw everything, but now there's background noise. And it is drawn as background noise. This helps a lot, but what you still have the problem of, okay, so I click on this thing here, what is it connected to?
To nowhere.
Yeah. Well, it's just on this side, and over here it's here. Is it connected to anything else?
Yep.
Where?
Down to the...
This guy. What's this guy connected to? Is it this one or this one?
Yeah. Hard to figure that out.
Right. So the next thing we did was, okay, so if I turn on what's called selection filtering... Now, of course, remember, all these options should be turned on, period. There won't be a way to turn these off.
Right.
So now I click on this... And it's a little clearer what's going on, all right? Because even the things that are completely in view are now de-emphasized. They're still drawn as a solid line. They're not dot dots or really thin things. They're just drawn in this sort of gray.
Yeah.
Now, this makes things really clear. Next thing we wanted to do was, as it turns out, there's a lot of scrolling around that's done inside of the mapper, okay? So here, we would go over here, and we would scroll this thing up, and poof! We now know where everything is.
Yep.
All right, that's great. So this is working good. And then it's like, wait a second. Now I got to come back over here and scroll. As it turns out, this is software, and it knows where the line was drawn to.
Yep.
So let's scroll it into view. Seemed like a logical thing to go do. Honestly, goodness, we actually got grief from people before seeing the prototype on this, because they thought that it would be moving things around too much, as if... That was a bad thing, because the user was going to have to move things around. So let's go ahead and turn on what's called synchronized scrolling and auto-scroll of relevant things. So we go and click on things, click on this one, everything comes into view.
Let me back up a little bit. Yep.
Okay. So you literally, when you click on something, say scroll.
So where are these guys now who thought this was a bad idea?
Oh, they're on board. They think this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Okay.
You didn't fire them? You didn't kill them?
No. A lot of them were in the customer-facing or testing groups and things like that, and they are paid to be negative. Yeah. We want them to be negative. We want them to question everything we do. The last thing we want them to do is to assume everything we write is perfect.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's...
There's no unperfect code written in Microsoft, is there?
Well, there's no imperfect code written, period, okay? I mean, it's not a matter of what your code does, but how it interacts with all the other code that's out there. That's where it really falls apart. Viruses aren't bad. It's just how they interact with everything else that's the bad part.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
That's a hard concept to explain to people.
It is, I know, okay? But soft, I mean, yeah, okay, so...
If there was a code, a virus sitting here on the desk, it's not going to do anything.
No,
right? Because it's not interacting
right.
with the system.
So... In fact, it may be useful things to look at, because there's a lot of cool stuff you can look at in self-replicating code, things that would be very applicable, agents on the net, things like that. But as soon as you put them in the wrong environment, mind you, they may be designed to be in the wrong environment anyway. So, So just by doing these little simple things, we can actually solve quite a number of problems. But you'll notice we still run into these types of layout issues. So this guy's connected to here. This guy gets information from here and from way up there somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this led us to the other problem that we have all the time, which is the fact that these schemas are pristine. In other words, we can't just come in here and reorder these, because the order really matters.
Does it? Why?
Well, when you're dealing with flat files and things of this nature, or you're dealing with instance data where they don't actually have the items being named or the items properly identified, order is paramount, okay? So we can't depend on order being something we can just fiddle around with.
Got it.
But what we found was, like in this particular case, we have this huge flat file record coming in. Lots and lots of great stuff in here, most of which is never used.
Yeah.
In fact, when you're dealing with these 10,000 and 15,000 item schemas, the vast majority of the time, you are pulling out small bits of information from all sorts of places to a smaller record.
Right.
Or you're mapping a smaller record to this big thing that you're going to post out eventually.
Yeah.
So the result is that you're not using most of this. But tree views are really built around the concept of collapsing children. Boink.
Yep.
Okay. Boink. What about collapsing these things out?
I love your sound effects, by the way.
Oh, you like the sound effect? I keep trying to convince somebody we need to put them into software, but everybody looks at me weird. They actually look at me weird all the time, so it's not a big thing to me. So we've got these ranges of siblings in here that are just sort of hanging out and occupying space.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll go over to another prototype, because we actually have two prototypes we've been working with.
Okay.
When George saw all the maps, and we started talking about some of the things that we, could do, may not do, whatever, we hadn't started our prototyping effort yet.
Yep.
So we sort of started up like a dueling prototype for all intents and purposes. He went off and prototyped some stuff, we went off and prototyped other stuff. Then as he finished up things, we integrated them into our prototype, and there was some back and forth, but he actually got further along in one prototype with the tree views than we ever did. So because of timing issues, we didn't actually integrate it back in. But, which brings us back to his prototype.
Yep.
Okay, so George went off and literally rewrote a mapper.
Okay.
Crazy guy. Crazy guy. It was like, wow. We came back, what was it, about 2 weeks later, and you had this basically up and running. It was just like,
yeah.
I mean, the developers work on this stuff for a very long time, and then somebody just comes in and sort of rips it off.
Yeah. That's why you have gray hair, right? Worked a lot of long nights.
Well, yeah, he was actually working on the TreeView stuff before he went on his annual boat ride. And it just finished it up before he went off on his boat ride, dropped a bunch of code, and said, here we go, I'm heading off. For 2 months, you go off up to Alaska, and...
Well, I took a two-month sabbatical.
Yeah. Went on your boat ride.
That sounds fun.
Went up to Alaska.
Yeah.
But we finished this before I left.
Absolutely, absolutely. Even though there was a newer version of it when you got back, and we didn't know about it until yesterday. It was kind of like, really? You made more progress? Anyway, so, back over to his prototype. So his prototype is actually like our prototype.
Do you like Eric Horvitz? Do you work on your sabbaticals? His wife has to take him out of GPRS.
I didn't on this one.
That's good to hear.
His wife takes him on away from GPRS so that he can't be answering emails.
So
my wife's like that too.
So this mapper prototype is just like ours, into that if you click on it, it fully highlights, it animates all over the place. A couple things it does that we don't do is we have these little tick marks. And
what do those do?
Okay, so a scroll bar here, let's find one that's really highly separated. Okay, so here's one. A scroll bar at the end of the day is pretty much a preview.
Yeah.
Okay? This is the entire document.
From top to bottom.
This is how much you can see at a time. All right.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay.
So these are proportional scroll bars.
Yep.
Ripped off from the Amiga. But anyway, so that was my little plug for the portal Amiga computer. Anyway, so the thing is, we don't use it for anything other than navigating around inside of this space.
Right.
Which is kind of silly, all right? Because you've got all this wonderful room to draw, all right? So it dawned on us, what we wanted to do was, like, in the particular case of here, we have this link coming up from here, going to here. So where is that relative to what you're seeing? It's about in the middle, so there it is. So if I pick this up and I move it up and down, now it's towards the bottom. Now this moves towards the bottom.
Oh, I see a little tick, Mark.
The little tick. We jokingly call it the IntelliTick. Just because.
And there's another tick at the top.
Right. So you see this link here? It goes way up there. Which is approximately here on the scroll bar.
Okay.
In fact, it connects to loan type code. And if I click on it, whoop, you scroll up to there. Actually, I'll do, there's a little bit of a scrolling issue there. That's why they're prototypes. So if you come all the way up to here, there it is.
Yeah.
So the ticks show you where you are relative to everything else that's going on here. Now,
so who came up with the tick?
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
And what was the idea for that? And you just
We did some work a couple of years ago with Ben Betterson at University of Maryland on a calendar system on a PDA called Datelens, and it had the scroll bar tick marks in the scroll bar as an information display. What we do different here is that we made these tick marks active, so that if you hover over it, you get a tooltip telling you what's there, and if you click on it, then it does an animated scroll to that part of the tree. So,
very cool.
So, which is great. Now we know where the other one is relative to the first one, okay?
Yeah.
But we still have all this space between here and there,
yeah.
Okay? So it dawned on us, what we wanted to do is we wanted to put in a new collapsing system to a tree view. We want to teach it a new way to collapse, and we call it sibling coalescence. For lack of a better term,
sibling
coalescence, as opposed to parental or children coalescence.
Right.
In this case, we are collapsing out the siblings to something we're interested in. So, let's just turn this option on. Boink. Now, you'll notice the scroll bar is gone. Okay?
Yeah.
Everything, like here, this group, is collapsed out of existence. So, it's all there. You can collapse and expand it back out. Okay,
yep.
But more importantly, if I click on something like this, now everything's in view at once.
Yeah.
All right. So all the quote unimportant things, the things that aren't linked at the moment,
yeah,
are folded out of existence temporarily.
Now,
this is very similar to the region folding that you see over inside of the code editor inside of Visual Studio.
Yeah.
So
now this one doesn't look like it goes anywhere. Why is it still visible?
Bug in prototype.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay, fine.
Is this the latest version?
I grabbed it this morning.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes. Embarrassing questions. But this is the reason why we're not shipping it. It's a prototype.
Yep.
Okay. So,
I could be a tester.
Everybody can. That's the important thing. We just need to give it to them. So, now, the sibling coalescence could be done a different way, and here it's everything that is linked is left, and everything unlinked is removed. If you were working on a map the second time, you may want to reverse this logic and only show you the things that haven't been linked yet, because those are probably the things you really care about. And as you link things up, they just sort of disappear out of existence because you don't need to work on them anymore. So depending on how you want to look at things, you can use the sibling coalescence in other ways. Now, the other thing that George put in, turn off coalescence just because it's cooler this way, is searching. Now, if you've got this huge thing, you're trying to find something, let's say code.
Yep.
So I typed in code here.
Yep.
Now you'll notice that blue ticks have appeared all over the place. See there. Okay, now these ticks, like, turn them off just temporarily, now they're red. These are all the places where matches were found. Refund code, off code, blah, 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 including one way down here called alt loan program type code. All right?
Yep.
So adding in searching and applying the ticks to that, it's not just what you click on, those appear in blue, but it's also what you've searched against. So you can actually use these ticks for a bunch of different things. And we actually think that the ticks inside of the scroll bar is a generally useful concept. In fact, so useful, we going off and actually trying to make it more applicable to other groups. Because if you've got a scroll bar, in all likelihood, there are points of interest along this. Whether it's where comments are, whether it's where bookmarks are, whether it's where breakpoints are, this is the types of things you want to allow easy navigation to. Likewise, so you can use a code editor and a list box or even just the standard scroll bar. Okay, right now, most people with their scroll bars, they might have it so that you stop every 10 steps or, you know, there's 10 steps across the entire range. Why not show the marks there?
Yeah.
We go off and we use the track bar for this purpose, but the scroll bar is just as useful. In fact, we created a brand new thing just so that we didn't put ticks inside of the standard scroll bar.
Yeah.
Also, applying this logic searching type stuff to things like the tree view and list views and other types of places, actually navigating any of those is a lot more helpful if you actually have searching. But searching only really works well if you know what the heck you're searching for, which is the other part of getting started with the mapper. So, was there anything else here you wanted to go through? I can show the curve lines.
The tick idea is really interesting.
The curve lines, okay, fine. No, curve
lines. I can see using the ticking idea on desktop search and all sorts of places.
So I'm going to curve.
Have you guys talked to the desktop search team about putting ticks into the...
Well, the joke is, if you go over into search, do you remember Solution Designer? We had this big preview thing. That's a two-dimensional scroll bar, essentially, okay? And we're actually showing you where things are inside of it. So if you came over here and you searched for... So we're searching for Eddie Churchill here. We can turn on what's called highlighting terms. You see these little tiny boxes marked here? You can also turn on, and this is the MSN desk bar that we ship, turn on what's called the preview, and you get this little preview strip. And it's just like what you see inside of the Solution Designer. So for all intents and purposes, I can use this as the scroll bar.
Yeah.
Okay. All they haven't done yet is to put the ticks in the actual real IE scroll.
Yeah.
You can put the ticks everywhere. It's a general purpose, useful type thing. So let me get rid of all these, and we'll go ahead and shut this down, and we'll go to the actual, back to our original mapper here. All right, so we're back over here. And like I said, searching is great if you know what you're looking for. It's like the dictionary. If you know how to spell it, you can look it up. But you don't want to use the dictionary if you don't know how to spell something. It's a losing effort. Which brings us to what's called auto-mapping, or suggestive mapping, or guided mapping. We have all sorts of terms that have been suggested, Phil. And they're all equally, okay? So, IntelliMapping has also been suggested. And this comes down to, okay, I've got something over here. So let's say here, service type. Jeez. Pardon our, see, all the prototypes have problems.
Oh, yeah.
So, service type code. I need to map that.
Yep.
Okay, this is the destination. I need to fill it up with something. So I come over here to our handy-dandy search. We put it at the bottom instead of at the top. George puts it at the top. Service.
Yep.
Okay, so it found lender servicer status code and lender servicer status date time stamp, and it did not find what we were looking for, which is service type code.
Right.
Because over here, it's not called service.
Yep.
Why? Who knows? Some expert designed this thing. Honest to God, experts, they're amazingly good at this stuff. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to click back over here.
Yep.
And we have this magic key called the shift key that we use for auto mapping in the current mapper, and we're reusing it for this. So when I press down here, it breaks apart the words, and it looks at the sort of character patterns. In this particular case, it breaks it up into service, and type, and code, and hold on one second.
Yep.
Is the accessibility stuff coming up? No, okay, fine. So it breaks the word into these subwords. It also looks at like underscores and things of this nature. And it knows about vowels, and it knows about how sort of people abbreviate, which is basically removing letters from the end, probably going after vowels first, dealing with transposing of characters and things like that. And it actually tries to come up with a score by looking at all the other words over on the on the other side and try to find somebody with the best score.
Yep.
So you can almost... That's what these guys worked on.
Yeah.
Do you want to describe it a different way?
No, you're doing fine.
Okay, fine. No problem. So But the key here is it looks at everything, and it's not something that has to be taught, so it just works right off the bat. So here we go. Shift. And it looked over at service type code, and it matched it. It said best match SVC type code.
Yeah.
And it would have taken you a while to actually figure out what somebody decided to shortcut as. You can actually do up and down arrow to go between other suggestions. So I'm going to go ahead and do an up arrow. And lender servicer status code. Remember, that was one of the ones that we found by looking for service.
Yeah.
But we'll go back to our first choice, SVC type code. And we just press enter.
Now, does it look inside the format or just at the name?
It looks at the one.
Well, I mean, it looks at the name, it looks at the structure, context of other elements on the path, it looks at the neighborhood, whether other elements surrounding the element to be examined have already been mapped, suggesting that maybe other neighbors are good candidates, looks at the type, all of these get incorporated into the mix and coming up with a decision.
It's about, what, 500-600 lines worth of lovely little code to do this.
Yeah, that's about pretty.
Yeah. Maybe a bit more.
It also will like reorder words and things of this nature, and you'll see some really juicy ones come up here. So let's go to the next one.
Okay.
Current guarantee amount matches current GAR amount. Yeah, sure. We'll take that one. Next one, guarantee adjustment indicator, GAR ADJ indicator code. Sure, that sounds good. Next one to the bottom. Guarantee amount reduction code to GAR amount reduction code. Here comes one of my favorite ones. Reinstatement available amount. Amount available for reinstatement.
So there was it looking for the word reinstatement and found it?
Well, it was looking for all the different words. In this particular case, reinstatement was a dead-on match, and that worked great. But the other words were also there, even though they were partially goofed. Like avail does not have the L.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And amount has been shortened out. Four has been added. Not a big deal, okay? But of all the things that were there, that was the best score out of the batch. And it works. So go on to the next one. This is an easy one. Actual int rate.
Yeah.
And then my last one, revised notice of guarantee code matches to revised NTC of GAR indicator code. And there. At no point did my hands touch the mouse. So this type of searching algorithm, even though it looks like, wow, it'd be great for this mapping stuff, mouse over there. It'd be great for this mapping stuff, but it's also, once again, generically useful.
Yeah.
A lot of searching systems, they go off and they go, okay, fine, we're going to let you do wildcards. Okay, woohoo, repping my world away, okay? But at the end of the day, you still, if they get the letters in the wrong order, all right, any wildcarding you want isn't going to help you, all right? Avail might be okay. How many letters do you put there before you put the wild card there? So this actual matching algorithm, you just type in a piece of text and a whole collection of other things to go look at, and you can go do that type of searching. Okay, so even like code editing, like bring it over into Visual Studio, is one place that we are currently beating on the doors to try to get them to look at this particular algorithm, because this is a generally useful matching algorithm that doesn't know anything about it doesn't know anything about English. I mean, if it was German and German, it would work. English and English, it would work, because the characters are just, I mean, it's just character patterns.
Yeah.
So, but this is another example of an MSR thing that we put it in one place, but we're actually planning to use it all over the place. The searching down here, right now we're just doing simple substring searching here. We're going to take this exact same routine, apply it here, so it'll actually find the matches up and down here.
That makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So we showed off all this stuff at PDC.
So when is this going to show up in a real product?
Sometime after now.
Okay. These guys are all laughing. You're starting to talk like a researcher.
No! So we've got BizTalk 2006 coming out at the end of the year. It's being launched with everything else this year.
Yeah.
And this will happen after that.
Yeah. Okay. And this interview is, what is it? September.
Right.
Right so, after the PDC.
Right.
So,
yeah, when we did the Solution Designer one, we knew we were going to be showing off both this and the Solution Designer, but it was the PDC, you can only show this much. Here we can show a lot more and actually explain to you why we did some of this stuff.
No, that makes sense. But did you guys write this stuff in C-sharp? Or?
I did mine on C-sharp, yes.
Yeah, it's all in C-sharp.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Managed code. Kate's ass, man. He probably wouldn't have been able to do the mapper in 2 weeks if it hadn't been for C-sharp.
Yeah.
I would hope.
Maybe three.
Mind you, he spent the next month beating his head against the tree view, so it is probably the most advanced transmorgification of the tree view that we've seen so far. And hopefully we'll make it into either a future version of comm controls, wind forms, or better yet, something maybe in the Avalon type stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's, like I said, it's generally useful type stuff.
Yeah. So how do ideas go from group to group? Now, are you guys evangelizing this, or hopefully other employees will watch the channel?
Oh, sure. What tends to happen here is I go around, and other groups are doing similar type of mapping concepts, whether it's, most of them are not doing XML to XML, but they're doing other things. And we go around, and we show off this, and they're looking at user interface ideas, and we tell them, go off and talk to these guys, and in some cases, they talk to the MSR guys. I've seen other cases where you'll eventually see new UIs out of these people, and they've never talked to them. They just ran off with the idea and did it all on their own.
Yeah. So for the tree view improvements and the scroll bar improvements, we've talked to a bunch of different teams and actually given the code to a bunch of different teams. There are people in Microsoft Business Solutions, Microsoft Business Foundations, the SQL XML team, and the Vista shell team have all looked at this and are using it to one extent or another.
Now, the searching algorithm literally only came into being like last month. We went screwing around right before...
First week in August, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we got together and it was just like... Then all of a sudden they showed up, it was like maybe 2 weeks later, and it's just like, here, this is what we've got. And it's just like, wow, it's like magic. We'll take one of these.
Yeah.
So we haven't, everybody we've shown it to has all been like, oh, nice. But it's so early in the game, we haven't actually talked to as many people as we've done with the visualization stuff.
Right.
So
you showed this last week at the PDC?
Mm-hmm.
And how did people react to it?
When can I have it?
Yeah. That's what always
just
happens.
Just ship it, damn it. So.
Why not?
Well, there was one guy who complained about my shirt.
Yeah.
The rest of them were all very, very positive. The guy who complained about the shirt liked the software. He just didn't like the shirt.
Yeah.
So.
But why? This is one thing. When you see a prototype, you're like, oh, I want that now. Why can't I have it?
Because it's not ready.
Yeah.
And it has to fit into... You can't just stop other things that are also eminently useful for customers. Like in BizTalk 2006... new improved admin experience, config experience, and all these other deployment type experiences. These are all valid things that we want to get in the customer's hands as soon as possible. The last thing you want to do is to stop everything to try to wedge this in.
Yeah.
So the best thing is don't screw with the train and figure another way to get it out as fast as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to have to wait till 0.10 for this stuff. It will happen sooner than that, but we can't say when.
Now, there's two theories in the industry. One is to keep everything that's cool like this secret until you're ready to ship. And the
well,
other
as long
theory,
as you patented everything, it's perfectly fine. Or at least got the paperwork.
Well, they're not talking about patents. They're talking about wanting to come out and surprise people and all that fun stuff, right? Apple does this, right?
Right.
Steve Jobs doesn't let you see the iPod Nano until it comes out of his pocket on stage, right?
Well, it's the same thing as a regular iPod, just further away.
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, to be perfectly honest. So, you could go that route, but at the end of the day, we're working on stuff, and there's plenty of people who think that we don't actually think of things, okay? Now, some of these things you've seen in other places, but they've just not been used quite in this way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we do come up with stuff. We're not, and we're excited about this stuff. We want to get it out. We want to show it to people, and... also evangelize to the other groups inside of Microsoft. I mean, it's very possible that some of these ideas might come out from other groups before they come out here because their particular use is simpler than what we have to deal with.
Right.
But we literally have to make sure this does work against those monster schemas and it deals with the saving and all the compiling changes that we have to deal with.
Isn't that really why you show it off at like the PDC to get customers to actually give you feedback on
what you're thinking? Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if we showed it off and nobody wanted it, which was a fear, okay? So it's like, hey, but mapping's not really my problem. I mean, there are people that possibly think that way. If that had been the case, we would have said, okay, fine, let's not invest in this, let's go off in here. Wouldn't have made me happy, but anyway. But that's not what happened. Customers looked at it and went, when? Okay, not why, but when. And same thing with the solution designer. I mean, you put it out there, you find out whether or not it matches. I mean, there might be a customer out there who's doing something that isn't useful for this type of stuff, but yeah. We haven't come across that.
But it is the case that during our research, we actually did user studies, especially on the visualization part of this, and looked at what the subjects in the studies were experienced BizTalk users, so they knew the tool. And we introduced the features that Eddie's been talking about in stages and tested each stage against the base system, which was the original BizTalk mapper. And what we found was kind of the ideal user study results. Each feature set gave you better task performance times and better satisfaction results. So we have a lot of evidence already before PDC that this was something that users would
To be perfectly on. Honest, in this particular case, it was some the PDC demonstration was more of a, we would have been utterly shocked if people would have said, what's the point, okay? It just one more validation of what we're working on, so. Yeah.
It's interesting, you're bringing in the science part of computer science, right? Which is, you build a prototype or an idea, and then you show it to users and see how they actually use it, right? What do you guys learn from that process? I mean, I see a lot of, you know, 21-year-olds who think computer science is just going off in their bedroom and coding up some system and shipping it out on the net, and that's researchers here take a far different approach to it.
There are a lot of things that we actually make our research and development cycle include a series of user studies, and we learn a lot from every user study, and that feeds back into the design and the next iteration of the design. So it's important for that. Also, as we're in our visualization research, we're trying to understand how to take advantage of the human perceptual system in particular and reduce cognitive load. So when we come up
with
what
does that mean?
Well, what it means is simple example is in the original mapper, when you selected something and trying to figure out what it was connected to, there was a big cognitive load because you had to track through and select items and scroll
basically
around.
Basically, a cognitive load is when I have to use my brain.
Right.
And then I have to put the beer down
and the
actually think about it.
You're trying to shift it to perception. So when you make a selection, we propagate all of the highlight, find all of the connected links, propagate the highlighting, emphasize those things, and de-emphasize everything else. And what you're trying to get is kind of a pop-out effect. So your perceptual system sees the pattern, you understand what's connected to what, you don't have to think much about it. It's right there.
So another subtle version of that was, you'll notice in George's prototype, he did it better than we did in our prototype. Everything just sort of animates around. Because as soon as you click on something, if the whole world just shifts to show you what it's associated with, your brain immediately, okay, where was I? Because there's no fluid to get here. There's no fluid motion. So they went off and did previous studies to find out precisely how long you could take to do this type of animation and everything. And it was just like, so we come over to him and he goes, it has to take this long. It's got to be done this fast. Can't be any shorter, you know, that type of stuff. And it was just like, oh, okay, fine, never mind. So we just built up on stuff that we already learned.
I've been working on these kind of animated transitions for a long time now, since 1988, and we've learned a lot about how to do this correctly. We know that somewhere between a half a second and 1 second is fast enough that users never feel like they're waiting for anything, but it's slow enough that you can get a good enough animation in there that the user is able to track the change and understand at a perceptual level what they're looking at without having to think about it.
Now, it used to be, hardcore computer geeks, you know, coders, let's say animation is eye candy or gratuitous.
We have some studies that prove that it in fact, can increase task performance, or rather improve task performance times. And it definitely increases user satisfaction because they don't have to think as much about what they're looking at.
A great example of this is you go over into your 3D games that you have nowadays, like Halo. Yeah. All right, it used to be you know, very, very stop action type, moving on, next room type thing. The more immersive it got, the more fluid the world got, the more animated the world got, the more you actually literally were in the world, mentally speaking. And you were used to it. You could adjust to it very, I mean, it felt like you were there.
Yeah.
All right. And it was all that eye candy that helped that happen. And it's the same type of effect for business software. It's just that we don't do it that often. But the more we do it, the more it's just like, well, of course you've got to do it that way.
Anything else I need to know about the mapper?
Oh, there's tons more, but we're running out of time.
Yeah.
As always.
This is good stuff.
Yeah.
And thanks very much for coming over here.
Right.
And trekking across campus to come and see us.
Right.
Thanks.
Okay.